Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
The doctor is in here on Monday mornings, and Thomas Moran is the chief medical officer at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Good morning, doctor. Let's talk first about cancer before age 50 increasing, and a new study looked at which types, and basically they don't know why this is happening with younger people, do they?
Yeah, good morning, Bob. There has been some research looking at really 2 million cancer diagnoses in people between the ages of 15 and 49 years old over the course of about 9 years. And they're seeing an increase in detection of cancers, mostly made up of colon, kidney, uterine, and breast cancer, with breast cancer making the majority of the excess cancers. There was about 4,800 additional cases of breast cancer that were noted when they were looking at the data. Some of the links, they don't really know what's causing this. And if you kind of look through some of these cancers are linked to obesity. We also have better detection of cancer as we developed over time of kind of screening and looking for the cancer. And if you look at breast cancer, you know, we have individuals that are delaying the first pregnancy and age that they have their first child, and if they're breastfeeding that, and pregnancy and breastfeeding have been known to decrease the overall risk of breast cancer. So there's more research that needs to be done on this to kind of look through what are the really linkages to causing this increase. It could be a host of factors that are out there, but it's one of the things that they're going to continue to look at in the research circles to try and figure out what's this increase is coming from.
Is it possible that some of this is because more people are better about getting screened now? Could that be?
Yeah. Screening, our screening tests, our ability to pick up certain type of cancers have improved over time, and more people are really kind of getting in and getting checked, which could lead to that increase. Not necessarily that you can overall say more cancers are happening. It's just that we might be detecting more cancers. But more research needs to go on this to really kind of tie it all together for us.
There's been some research about the impact exercise can have on people undergoing cancer treatment. Talk about this, because this is a pretty positive study, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, when you think about cancer, individuals going through cancer treatment have, from just the treatment itself, from surgery, chemotherapy, you end up with, you know, an effect on your body, which causes fatigue, pain, depression that goes through. And one, the research has shown that if you can increase your exercise, and that exercise can be aerobic exercise or weightlifting or even mind-body, like yoga, tai chi, they find that the fatigue, the pain associated with some of this, and the mental health that are affect you when you're going through cancer treatment are really improved overall. So trying to get people to not sit and do nothing during the treatment, if they can get up and walk, if they can increase a little bit of exercise overall, and even just doing some meditation, yoga, or tai chi, they have better outcomes with their cancer. Even before surgery, not having cancer treatment, those individuals that do some pre-op, before the surgery, exercising, actually do better post-op after the surgery. And we've said many, many times in talking that exercise itself, getting out and moving, even if it's a little bit of just 30 minutes a day of walking, does really good for your health overall.
Yeah, we've talked about that a lot, and it does make sense because, and it's just that when you really don't want to do it, when it's the last thing you want to do because you're not feeling right, it's the best thing you can do, isn't it?
It helps a lot because when you're going through, you know, cancer itself is inflammatory. The treatments that we do are inflammatory, and exercise helps kind of lower that inflammation overall, which improves your health and well-being, that helps you heal better during those treatment times. And you got to remember, like, the treatments we do are sometimes a balance between getting rid of the cancer and, you know, these treatments sometimes affect the healthy cells of your body. And the more we could do to keep those healthy cells functioning and acting in a good way with decrease in inflammation to our body, the better we do with healing.
Dr. Thomas Moran is the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medicine's Central DuPage Hospital. And so many people dealing with Parkinson's or dealing with a family member who has Parkinson's. So this is pretty good news about a drug, isn't it, Doctor?
Yeah, Parkinson's disease affects many older individuals. It is one of those neurodegenerative diseases that has the cells that produce dopamine die. And with it, you get the symptoms of Parkinson, which is stiffness, coordination difficulties, tremors, difficult to get up and move, and just overall effects that cause you to really affect your life overall. One of the mainstays of treatment for a long period of time has been levodopa, a drug that produces dopamine in the brain and limits the effects of the disease as you go forward. That drug really works on three of the receptors that dopamine works on. But some of that drug causes side effects, and the side effects are sleepiness or hallucinations. You can also have weight gain, hypertension, and leg swelling. And as the longer you're on that drug, sometimes the more you need of the drug, and you don't have what they call on-time periods where you're doing well from the off-time periods when you're not. So this new study is coming out with this drug. Tavapadon is the drug. It is really in the pipeline to get approved by the FDA, hopefully within the next year. And this drug works on some of the other receptors that dopamine works on. And it has limited side effects. There's longer times where you're on time. And the side effects of it were really no different than taking a placebo during the study. And the good thing about it gives our neurologists that treat people with Parkinson's another tool to combat the disease, and it can balance the need sometimes either solo therapy or therapy in combination with the levodopa, where they don't have to take the increasing doses, and they really alleviate their side effects. It is one of those things that is very promising for the individuals that are suffering from Parkinson's.
It's very alarming to read that Parkinson's cases are expected to surge by 2050, affecting up to 25 million people globally. Is that because of the aging population mainly?
Yeah, it affects people over really 80 and older, but you could get it earlier in life. That age group is really looking to give more and more individuals within it that have Parkinson's. So this study and this development of this new drug is really looking at treatments that can really help with that. Because, you know, we're living longer, and as we live longer, we come down with diseases that sometimes we wouldn't get if our life wasn't extended that long.
Mm-hmm. Another thing a lot of people and kids deal with, peanut allergies. And the first clinical trial of its kind was done recently. And tell us the results here.
Yeah, peanut allergies, food allergies are really those things that affect your life greatly. When you think about it, it is you live in fear of coming in contact with something that could cause you to have a severe reaction that you need help immediately for. One of the mainstays of treatments for children's over time has been oral immunotherapy, where we give you little bits of peanuts in a flour to desensitize yourself over time. And what happens is you're able to tolerate peanuts in a little bit higher concentrations, which allows you to kind of live your life without having to be in a worry if peanuts were used in the preparation of that food. Never really been tried in adults overall. So the study looked at adults and using the same oral immunotherapy where they give a little bit of peanut flour over time and see how they tolerate it, and they increase it to the point where you're taking a gram of peanut flour or the equivalent of about four peanuts daily. And what it does, it's been life-changing for some of those adults that are on it. They're able to not live in the fear that they're in of, hey, if I come in contact with something, you know, am I going to be in really bad situation and need help right away because I don't know how they're preparing the food, to I think I could tolerate this. They still have to carry their EpiPen around with them if they come in contact with more than it. But some of the participants in the study are like, I get up every morning, I take my four peanuts a day, and I have a much I feel safer throughout my day, and especially going out and getting food at restaurants and stuff and not preparing it myself. So it's a really good, they're going to need more studies to go on with it and more people to be enrolled. But again, it gives our allergists another tool to help combat some of these really, you know, life altering conditions that can allow people to live better lives.
Interesting. Here's a question we all ask. How come when we were kids, we never heard about peanut allergies? Were people just getting sick and we didn't know why?
I think it is, you know, I mean, think about it now. It's everything is everywhere all the time,
yeah.
Especially with social media. Beforehand, it was, if you had peanut allergy, it might have been one or, you know, two people within your school or your community that you knew of. And that was only because you came in contact with them when they had an allergic reaction. Other than that, it wasn't out there all the time.
Mm-hmm. Finally, I read a long time ago about the health benefits of cinnamon. And so I started adding cinnamon to various things and and getting treats with cinnamon. I thought that was good. But now we're hearing about why you should use caution with cinnamon. How come?
So cinnamon, so spice, a lot of people love putting it on their oatmeal. It's used in coffees, teas, you know, hot chocolate. There has been more and more use of cinnamon in a supplement format, not just kind of sprinkling it over the food that you're having, but more concentrated and long-term taking it. And understand that cinnamon has a component in it called coumarin. And people have been on Coumadin in the past, and coumarin is a blood thinner. So individuals that have, can, you know, on medications that thin the blood have to be careful about taking supplements. Overall, like the thought process you should look at, if you're on medications and you're going to go start taking a supplement, it's really talk to your doctor or your pharmacist and say, is this supplement something that might interact with the medications that are on, that I'm on? Understand that many of our medications come from plant and plant-based, chemicals that we have. So there is cross-reactivity overall. But if you're taking cinnamon in a regular, putting it on your oatmeal, sprinkle it in your coffee, or having a cinnamon latte or something like that, you're not in any danger. It's when it's the higher concentrations of it that you really need to talk with your pharmacist or your doc.
Good. I'm going to have my cinnamon muffin now. Northwestern Medicine Dr. Thomas Moran. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too, Bob. Take care.